Welcome to the deep dive. So today we are opening up just a massive stack of sources. We're talking geopolitical research papers, local Chinese municipal finance reports, deep tech industry teardowns, you name it.
It's a lot of paper.
It is a lot. But we are digging through all of this to answer one incredibly massive question. And to get us there, I want you to picture an office in Yizhuang.
Okay.
It's in the southeast suburbs of Beijing. And sitting in that office is a guy named Gao Jiang. He's a 1990s born engineer, got degrees from Tsinghua University and USC, and he has a resume that includes a stint at Google's self-driving unit, Waymo.
Right, so a very serious pedigree.
Extremely. So in September of 2023, he and some former classmates launch a startup called Star Era, and their goal is to build a single foundation model, basically a sort of universal AI-driven brain that's capable of controlling multiple different types of physical robots.
Which is, I mean, it's just an astronomical ambition. Building a universal robotic brain is something the absolute biggest tech companies in the world are currently struggling with.
Yeah, exactly.
But the trajectory of Star Era is really what makes this story so staggering. Because less than 2 years after they open their doors, this startup hits a valuation of 10 billion RMB.
10 billion.
Yeah. Which, for context, is roughly 1.4 billion US dollars.
In under 24 months.
Right. Under 24 months.
And, you know, you don't just accidentally stumble into a unicorn valuation in the hardware space that fast. I mean, hardware is notoriously brutal. So to understand how a startup reaches that stratosphere so incredibly fast, you really have to look at what is happening just behind the curtain.
Right, because there's a lot happening.
A ton.
Yeah.
In early 2026, a Beijing AI fund quietly dropped over 700 million RMB into a single robotics innovation center. They are essentially laying down this massive, almost invisible grid of state and local capital just to ensure these companies scale at light speed.
And that invisible grid is our exact mission for this deep dive today. We're unpacking the staggering reality of China's 2026 robotics industry. We're going to explore this $26 billion war chest that local governments have aggressively opened up. We'll look at the brutal, deliberately Darwinian strategy guiding all this money. And maybe most importantly, we're going to break down a highly sophisticated cyber coupon system that is quietly and very effectively bypassing U.S. chip sanctions.
Yeah, that part is wild. So to really grasp the scale of what is happening here, we have to look at the timing. Because I was reading through these municipal reports, and it immediately begs the question, like, why now?
Exactly.
Why are all these local Chinese governments suddenly throwing tens of billions of dollars at humanoid robots in 2026 specifically?
Well, the answer to that is actually hidden in the collapse of an entirely different economic sector. You have to look at real estate.
Right.
For decades, local Chinese governments relied heavily on land sales and property development. That was their primary cash cow.
It was everything.
Yeah, it was the engine of municipal finance. It was how cities paved their roads, how they built schools, how they funded themselves. But with the real estate market cooling down so drastically and that slump dragging on for years, these municipalities basically found themselves staring down a massive fiscal cliff.
They needed money.
They desperately needed a new way to survive. They needed to generate high-margin tax revenue, and they needed to create jobs for millions of new college graduates.
That makes a lot of sense. The old well dried up, so they had to dig a new one. And right on cue, the central government in Beijing rolls out the 15th five-year plan. And plastered all over this plan is a phrase they call new quality productive forces.
Right. Which I know sounds like dense political jargon.
It totally does.
Here.
But on the ground, it basically means a clear mandate to build hyper-advanced, tech-driven manufacturing.
And local governments took that mandate and treated it like a starting gun. Across major cities, we're talking Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Suzhou, Chengdu. We have seen an absolute explosion of these 10 billion RMB cluster funds.
That's insane.
It is. That's roughly $1.4 billion per fund, specifically earmarked just for robotics and AI.
But it's not even just an isolated push in a few tech hubs, though. Because if you zoom out and look at the national scale, the total funds dedicated entirely to humanoid robots across China have completely surpassed $26 billion.
Oh!
Yeah. And I was amazed just looking at the incentives they're offering. They aren't just handing out checks to these founders. They are practically rolling out the red carpet for them.
Oh, absolutely. They're offering free industrial land, they're subsidizing office and factory rent, and they're even throwing in purchase subsidies.
Wait, purchase subsidies?
Yeah, covering about 10% of the final robot selling price, just to guarantee there's actually a market for them once they're built.
That is wild. But, you know, while the overarching national goal is the same, dominate the robotics industry, the sources show that each city is treating this like a localized proxy war. They are using radically different, highly customized strategies to lure in the absolute best engineering talent and the most promising startups.
They really are. Every city has its own flavor.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the city-by-city strategic map is just brilliant. Let's start with Beijing, since that's where Gaojiang and Star Era are based.
Yeah.
Beijing is deploying a strategy they literally call patient capital.
Patient capital.
Yeah. They've set up a 15-year fund life cycle.
Yeah.
Which is an absolute eternity in the startup world. I mean, VCs usually want an exit in, what, 5 to 7 years?
5 to 7 is standard, yeah.
Right. But Beijing knows that building complex robot bodies and training these giant foundation models, it doesn't turn a profit overnight. So they are giving these companies a massive runway to do foundational research without that intense pressure of quarterly revenue.
Right. But to manage a 15-year runway effectively, Beijing has to be incredibly methodical about who actually gets that patient capital. It's not just a free-for-all.
Sure.
They use a framework called the 2+17 recommendation system. Basically, the city's Science and Technology Commission and the Economy and Information Bureau act as the two main hubs. Then, the 16 different districts plus the Economic Development Zone provide 17 distinct pipelines for nominating these promising startups from the ground up.
I saw that in the notes, but I was actually a bit confused by the mechanics of it. They have this massive pipeline of nominations, but they don't just blindly fund every single startup that gets pushed up the chain, right?
Yeah.
I read they use this thing called the 3-vote rule. How does a startup actually win those votes? Like, who is making the call?
It's a fascinating structural safeguard, really, to prevent corruption and wasted funds. Essentially, the decision-making power is divided into three distinct committees.
Okay.
The first vote comes from a purely technical committee, usually top-tier scientists and engineers. Their job is to ask, is this technology actually novel, or is it just vaporware?
Right, the reality check.
Exactly. Then the second vote comes from market professionals, like private venture capitalists. They step in and ask, can this actually be mass-produced and sold at a profit? And then the third vote comes from government strategists who ask, does this align with our 15-year industrial plan?
Okay, so it completely forces a balance. The scientists keep the government from funding bad tech, and the VCs keep the scientists from funding laboratory science projects that have zero commercial viability.
Precisely.
And all of this vetted patient capital is flowing toward a single geographic endpoint, which is Yuzhuang. Beijing is deliberately trying to build a 100 billion RMB supercluster in that specific suburb. And their ultimate goal is churning out 10,000 advanced humanoid robots a year.
Which is staggering. But that is Beijing's top-down, highly curated approach. Now, if you look down the coast at Shanghai, they're playing a completely different game. Shanghai is utilizing what they call an integrated ecosystem approach.
Right, because Shanghai is already home to these established hardware heavyweights. Companies like Hesai, which absolutely dominates the global market for autonomous driving sensors. So Shanghai's strategy isn't just to hand a hot new company a pile of cash. They're actually building 5 public platforms.
Yeah, let's break down what those platforms actually look like in practice, because it's brilliant. Imagine you're a robotics startup. You need to physically stress test your new bipedal robot to ensure, say, its knee joints don't shatter after 10,000 steps.
Right.
A precision Tesla rig for that specific task could cost you $2 million.
Which is a massive chunk of your seed funding just gone before you even build a working prototype.
Exactly the problem Shanghai is solving. So instead of giving 50 different startups the money to buy their own hyper-expensive testing equipment, the city government just builds a massive state-of-the-art testing facility.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, they open the doors and they let the startups rent time on the equipment for absolute pennies. They are providing shared compute clusters, shared training data repositories, shared pilot testing facilities. Plus, if a company is successfully developing a new large AI model, Shanghai will offer up to 50 million RMB in direct subsidies just for that specific software development.
It's just a pure infrastructure-first mentality.
Yeah.
They're lowering the barrier to entry so drastically that basically anyone with a good idea can start building. But If you think Shanghai's infrastructure is efficient, we really have to talk about Shenzhen.
Oh, Shenzhen is a whole other level.
It really is. When I was reading the reports on Shenzhen's strategy, it honestly sounded like they built an Amazon Prime delivery network, but for building literal robots.
That's a great way to put it. Shenzhen's logistics are almost hard to comprehend. They have engineered what they proudly call a one-hour hardware ecosystem. They've deeply linked the tech hubs inside their city with the massive manufacturing districts nearby, places like Dongguan and Huizhou.
To put that in perspective for you listening right now, if you were an engineer in Silicon Valley, designing a custom robotic arm, getting a specialized milled joint could take weeks. You send the CAD file to a fabricator, they queue it up, they machine it, they ship it back. It costs thousands of dollars in iterations alone.
It's slow and expensive.
Very.
Yeah.
The speed of Shenzhen is what absolutely blows my mind. You can have an engineer sitting in the Nanshan district of Shenzhen on a Tuesday morning, sketching out a digital algorithm and CAD file for a new robotic joint. By lunch, those digital specs are zapped over to a CNC factory in Dongguan. The physical parts are milled from solid metal that afternoon.
That's incredible.
By the evening, the parts are assembled and put on a high-speed courier, and by Wednesday morning, that engineer is testing the physical prototype right on their desk.
The distance between a digital concept and a physical prototype has literally been compressed to 24 hours. And Shenzhen is throwing its own massive financial weight behind this speed. They're layering district-level matching subsidies on top of city-level funds. They're mobilizing billions of RMB specifically to lower these rapid manufacturing costs and boost mass production capabilities.
Okay, wait a second, though. I have to push back here for a minute.
Sure.
I'm looking at the macro picture. You have Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Chengdu, Suzhou. All of them are pumping billions into their own local ecosystems.
Yeah.
And the result of all this frenzy is that there are now over 150 different companies building humanoid robots in China.
Right?
Isn't this just a recipe for a massive catastrophic bubble? I mean, it sounds like local politicians are just printing money to make dozens of identical cookie-cutter robots just to hit their quota for the 5-year plan.
You know, that is a highly critical observation, and
Nice.
you are entirely right to be skeptical. In fact, that exact concern reached the absolute highest levels of the Chinese government.
Really?
Yes. In November of 2025, the National Development and Reform Commission, the NDRC, which is China's top macroeconomic planning body, they held a major press conference, and they explicitly warned about exactly this phenomenon.
Wow.
They publicly stated that having over 150 companies churning out look-alike low-level robots was a massive waste of capital and was actually actively stifling genuine high-level innovation.
So they fully acknowledge it's a bubble. The local governments aggressively built this 150 company monster to save their post-real estate economies, and now the central government in Beijing is stepping in to say, stop wasting money, shut it down.
It certainly looks like a contradiction on the surface, right? The government's right hand funding the massive boom and the left hand crushing it. But if you look closely at China's industrial history over the last two decades, this isn't a mistake or a miscommunication. It is a highly deliberate, brutally effective four-stage design.
Ah, okay. The EV playbook.
Precisely. This is the exact blueprint they use to build their current global dominance in electric vehicles and solar panels. Stage one is exactly what we just described. Cheap capital, free land, and aggressive local subsidies create a massive, chaotic surge of hundreds of companies. It pulls all the engineering talent into the sector.
Which leads right into stage two, because the inevitable result of hundreds of companies building the exact same thing is massive overcapacity. You have way too many robots, not enough actual buyers, and it triggers a brutal cutthroat price war. Profit margins completely evaporate. Companies are literally selling robots at a loss just to keep the lights on.
Which is the trigger for stage three. The central government, via warnings like the one from the NDRC, they step in. They quietly tighten credit lines from state banks. They raise the technological barriers to entry for future subsidies. And they essentially orchestrate a wave of bankruptcies and forced mergers. They step back and let the weak die off in the very market they created.
And stage four is the ultimate payoff. From the smoldering wreckage of those 150 overfunded companies, three or four absolute battle-tested global champions emerge.
Just look at the EV space. I mean, you had hundreds of car companies 10 years ago. Now, BYD and CATL absolutely dominate the global battery and auto space.
Right.
The bloodbath isn't a bug in their economic system. It is the core mechanism of forced evolution. The state is willing to accept billions of dollars in sunk costs, duplicated efforts, and wasted local capital if it guarantees that the two or three companies left standing are capable of dominating the global humanoid market for the next 50 years.
A massive state-sponsored Darwinian experiment.
Exactly.
But, you know, building the physical robot, the titanium skeleton, the battery, the actuators, that's really only half the battle, right?
Yeah.
If we pivot from the body of the robot to the brain, things get infinitely more complicated and shockingly expensive.
Oh, absolutely. The physical hardware is just the vessel. To make a humanoid robot actually useful in a factory or a home, it needs a VLA model. That's a vision language action model.
And for anyone who isn't deep in AI research, training a VLA model is not like training a text-based chatbot where you just scrape the internet and feed it Wikipedia. A robot needs to understand three-dimensional physical space.
Think about the complexity of teaching a robot to simply crack an egg into a bowl. It's not just the command crack egg. The robot needs visual tracking to actually see the bowl. It needs spatial awareness to know the precise distance. It needs microsecond tactile feedback in its fingers so it doesn't crush the shell too early.
It's so much data.
It is. To teach a foundation model that level of nuance, you need millions of hours of human trajectory data. And you have to run all of this data through parallel simulations at 100 times normal speed, tens of thousands of times over, until the algorithm actually learns the physics of our world.
Which requires an astronomical amount of computing power. We're talking massive data centers packed with tens of thousands of the most advanced AI GPUs running constantly. The electricity bills alone are staggering.
Right. And if you are an absolute tech giant like Alibaba or Tencent, you have your own proprietary cloud infrastructure. You can absorb that cost. But if you are a two-year-old startup like Star Era, the cloud computing bill just to train your model once can run into the tens of millions of dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a straight shot into what the robotics industry calls the valley of death. You have brilliant talent, you have a revolutionary algorithm, but you go bankrupt just paying for the server time to test it.
I was looking at how the municipalities handle this, and I was honestly a bit lost at first. Because why not just reimburse the startup? Like, if a city wants a startup to succeed, why not just write them a check for $10 million and say, go buy some server time?
Embezzlement and mismanagement. Yeah, if you hand a startup a massive influx of pure cash, there's a very high risk that the money gets diverted to inflated salaries, luxury office spaces, or fake vendor receipts. The government needed a way to fund the compute without handing over a blank check, so they created the Hunliquan.
The computing vouchers.
Yes. Instead of cash, the city issues highly tracked cyber coupons. The government builds massive state-owned AI data centers. A startup applies to the city, gets their algorithm vetted, and is issued these vouchers.
Okay.
The startup then uses the vouchers to pay for compute time at the state-owned center. The government then reconciles the bill on the back end based on the exact hours of server time and network traffic used.
It's an incredibly smart mechanism. It turns a crippling fixed cost into a fully subsidized variable cost, extending their runway massively.
Mm-hmm.
And again, looking at the sources, different cities are slicing this up in totally fascinating ways. Shanghai offers up to 40 million RMB just for compute vouchers, but they also introduced a specific 5 million RMB data voucher. Why separate the data from the compute?
Because high-quality, scrubbed physical interaction data is incredibly expensive to acquire. You can't just download it for free. By specifically subsidizing the data purchase, Shanghai ensures these startups aren't training their brilliant, expensive algorithms on garbage, low-resolution data.
Makes sense. And Shenzhen went even further into the micromanagement of it. They mobilized 4.5 billion RMB and chopped these vouchers up into highly specific categories. You have compute vouchers, model API vouchers, which let startups plug into existing large models without building from scratch, and data vouchers.
It ensures every single yuan of public money is directly translating into algorithmic progress. But as effective as this Hunliquan system is for keeping startups alive, it is actually hiding a much larger and much more aggressive national strategy.
And here's where it gets really interesting. When I first read about this voucher system, I thought, wow, what an incredible lifeline for a startup. But the more you look at the actual mechanics of how you redeem them, it feels less like a grant and more like getting a massive $5 million gift card that you are only allowed to spend at one highly specific, slightly inconvenient mall.
That is the perfect analogy for what is happening. The catch to these vouchers is deeply tied to global geopolitics. The NDRC is currently rolling out a massive plan to spend 2 trillion RMB, nearly $300 billion, to build a nationwide network of AI data centers. Okay.
But there is a very strict rule attached to that infrastructure build-out. At least 80% of the hardware inside those state-owned data centers must be domestic Chinese chips.
So we're talking about chips like Huawei's Ascend series or Cambricon. But the global gold standard for AI training is NVIDIA. Every major AI company in the world relies on NVIDIA GPUs.
Right. Now, connect the dots with the computing vouchers. The local governments issue the coupons to the startups, but those coupons can only be redeemed at the state-owned data centers,
which are legally mandated to run on 80% domestic hardware. So if I'm a startup, I have to use domestic chips to get the free compute.
But wait, can't you just take code written for an NVIDIA chip and run it on a Huawei chip?
Absolutely not. And this is the major friction point. Think of NVIDIA's software ecosystem, which is called CUDA, like the English language. Hmm. It's the language the entire global AI world has spoken for a decade. All the tools, all the libraries, they are all in English. Huawei has its own software stack called CAN-N. That is like a completely new, incredibly complex dialect. You can't just copy-paste your robot's brain from NVIDIA to Huawei. You have to painstakingly translate millions of lines of code.
So a startup engineer might desperately want to use NVIDIA's highly established ecosystem because it's easier and faster. But if they want to access millions of dollars in free computing power to survive the valley of death, they are forced to abandon NVIDIA, translate their code, and run their massive workloads on Huawei's CAN-N software stack.
It is an incredibly elegant trapdoor to bypass U.S. trade sanctions. Think about the World Trade Organization rules. If the Chinese government simply handed tens of billions of dollars directly to Huawei to help them catch up to NVIDIA, it would immediately trigger massive WTO violations, international lawsuits, and massive trade blowback.
Because it's an illegal state subsidy of a specific corporation.
Exactly.
But they aren't doing that. They're subsidizing local robotic startups to help small businesses. Mm. It just so happens that those small businesses are functionally forced to use Huawei's infrastructure to cash the check.
And the real genius of this system is the feedback loop it creates. When a robotic startup takes their highly complex real-world VLA model and runs it on a domestic Huawei chip, they generate massive amounts of optimization data. Because it's a new system, they find the bugs, they push the limits of the hardware architecture, and all of that vital performance data feeds directly back to Huawei and Cambricon.
The U.S. sanctions, particularly the bans on exporting top-tier chips like the NVIDIA H200 to China, were designed to starve the Chinese AI ecosystem of computing power, to freeze them in place. But through this localized voucher system, the exact opposite is happening. The U.S. sanctions, combined with the state's domestic hardware requirement, are forcing the entire Chinese robotics industry to rigorously pressure test and optimize their homegrown chips. The sanctions are ironically forging a completely self-sufficient closed-loop ecosystem.
Now, we do have to acknowledge the reality check on the ground for the startups themselves. This is not a seamless, happy transition.
Definitely not.
When these engineers, who are trained on NVIDIA's ecosystem, have to port everything over to domestic chips, they face massive compilation errors, systems crash, they lose immense amounts of efficiency. They are essentially paying for that free state compute by sacrificing some of their own engineering productivity to fix Huawei's hardware bugs.
It's a massive friction point. But in the grand scheme of things, it is a lifeline. It allows these robotics companies to stay in the global race, pushing the physical boundaries of humanoid robotics while simultaneously serving as the involuntary testing ground for China's total semiconductor independence.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean for you? If we pull back and synthesize this whole incredible journey, we started by looking at local municipalities desperately scrambling to replace the tax revenue they lost from a crashed real estate market.
Yeah.
They pivot hard into the 15th five-year plan, opening up a staggering $26 billion war chest to build robotics clusters from scratch.
Right.
That flood of money creates 150 different companies in a deliberate, cutthroat survival of the fittest battle. And to keep those companies alive through the incredibly expensive AI training phase, the state issues cyber coupons, which quietly forces the entire industry to harden the domestic semiconductor market against U.S. sanctions.
It is a masterclass in deeply integrated long-term industrial policy. And this is exactly why this matters to you, whether you work in tech, finance, or just buy consumer goods. We are not just talking about which startup gets to build the coolest, shiniest robot toy. We are watching the real-time, state-sponsored engineering of an entirely new industrial revolution. The winner of the Starwinian battle won't just sell robots. They will control the underlying manufacturing, computing, and data infrastructure of the next century.
Which leaves us with one final, incredibly heavy question to ponder. We know how this specific playbook ends, because we saw it happen over the last decade with electric vehicles. When this brutal Darwinian experiment is finally over, and those final three or four hyper-subsidized, battle-tested, completely self-sufficient robotics champions emerge from the wreckage, what happens when they turn their sights outward to the global consumer market? Are we about to see a wave of highly advanced humanoid robots in our own homes, priced so aggressively that no Western startup can possibly compete? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources. Keep questioning the world around you.